This is Fresh Air. Today, at the age of 68, Frances Lear describes her life as happy and fulfilling. She founded Lear's Magazine in 1988 to fill the need for a stylish, popular magazine for older women. The money came from a divorce settlement from TV producer Norman Lear. They'd been married for 30 years. But in the new memoir that Frances Lear wrote, she reveals that happiness and self-esteem are relatively new to her life. She lived in the shadow of her famous husband. When she was young, her adoptive mother shunned her. Her adoptive father killed himself when she was 11. Her stepfather molested her. Frances tried to commit suicide several times. She opens her memoir questioning whether she should have been born at all. She was unwanted. She was born in a home for wayward girls, to a mother barely in her teens, who put Frances up for adoption when she was 14 months old. Lear writes that, as a fetus, she was a strong argument for abortion.
I know that's a powerful line to everyone. I am extremely, totally pro-choice. But when I wrote that page, because I think it's only one page and a half, it was 20 years ago. I was very, very depressed, and I did not want to live.
So this opening actually comes from 20 years ago, right before suicide attempt?
No, I don't remember when I actually wrote the page, but I know that it's very old, about 20 years old, and I gave it to my assistant, and I said, please put this someplace where you can retrieve it, because I know that I will need it someday.
Your mother had three abortions after she adopted you, because you say she had the abortions because she was afraid pregnancy would make her breasts sag.
My mother was an extremely vain woman. She was very pretty and very seductive. Very charming, witty, not a good mother, not a loving person. And I learned a great deal from her about what things look like, but I didn't learn much about what things feel like.
Your adoptive mother said to you that she chose you in the orphanage because you were the prettiest child there. You were adopted at 14 months, and you write that your mother kept you shut up in your room until your orphanage haircut grew out. It sounds like your mother was very obsessed with looks.
Yes, she was. She was extraordinarily vain. I know that I osmosed much of her feeling about looks, and I've tried all through the years to get rid of it as much as I could. I still think it's very important to be attractive and to keep oneself looking as good as you can. But I don't love people because they're pretty, as my mother did.
What are the different stages you went through in your life in terms of being obsessed with your own looks?
I think that as a young woman, I depended upon my looks for almost everything. I never thought that I had a brain. Nobody ever told me I had one. Certainly, my mother wouldn't have recognized it if I had one. I did poorly in school because I was a very troubled child. And all I had, it seemed to me, was a good body and a fairly good face. And that was my wealth. And as I grew older and my looks began to change, I went through torture because I didn't have a self. I had these fading features, which we're going to keep fading. We're not going to get any better. And I think at that time I realized that women who are attractive and rely upon their looks have a terrible, terrible time with aging. I've kept fighting that, and now I believe that that whatever I have that is attractive is infinitely more important than what I had as a young woman.
But you've had a facelift, haven't you?
Oh, several times.
So you feel comfortable about that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that more and more people are having facelifts because of the job market, not just because of vanity. And sexual viability is another reason. I mean, I want to be sexually viable until I stop walking.
Some people would see it as a contradiction that you, the editor of Lear's, which is supposed to kind of celebrate the older woman, is trying to kind of almost like deny her age by getting her facelifted?
No, I have to explain Lear's position on this. Mm-hmm. The pure feminist party line would say, don't do anything, just grow old gracefully. Lear's would say, you also may, if you wish, keep yourself as attractive as you can, as youthful looking as you can, because that pleases you. But if you want to be Germaine Greer and grow gracefully, go.
Let's continue in talking about some of the things that happened to you early on and how they affected your choices later in life. Your father killed himself when you were 11 years old. Do you know why he took his life?
No, of course not, but I have manufactured many stories through the years. It was during the Depression. A lot of men took their lives. He lost his business. He lost his house. He went out and bought an insurance policy for a great deal of money. And 3 weeks later, he committed suicide. Unfortunately, when parents commit suicide, children and even grandchildren believe that suicide is a solution to one's problems, which, of course, it is not. And I grew up with that solution in the front of my mind every time I was in a deep clinical depression. And so I have attempted suicide and almost made it. But inside of me is something that wants to live.
Good. Your mother remarried after your father committed suicide. Your stepfather sexually abused you. Fondling, not penetration. What really surprised me, not only the revelation, you know, that you'd been abused, but the very surprising part of that was that you were saying you kind of enjoyed the human contact. You know, you'd been so kind of, I guess, deprived of love in the family. And what was even more surprising is you talk about being somewhat aroused by it.
This is the most difficult part of incest, because most children who are incested are in homes where they are not getting the love that they need from both parents. And to have someone come to you and want you and love you and touch you, and it is, you feel belong, that you are loved, that you are a person, then of course you know somewhere in the back of your head, you know that it is wrong, that this is something you should not do. But our needs as children are very complicated. And incest is a very complicated issue.
You use the kind of collective we to say that children who had been the victims of incest found something almost loving about the contact. I don't think that's universally true at all. I'm sure that's true of some people.
But. No, I agree with you. It is not universally true, but it is often true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is probably truer than we have heard, because it's very difficult for people to say that.
You told your psychiatrist when you were 13 about the incest.
I actually was 16.
I'm sorry. Okay, thank you for correcting me. And what your psychiatrist did was call up your parents, invite them to the next session, and tell them some of what you had told the doctor. You went home, and then your stepfather came at you with a kitchen knife. Do you think your psychiatrist did the right thing in telling your parents?
I think she betrayed me. I think that was the first betrayal in my life. I never considered my father's suicide a betrayal. And I had a very hard time with the psychiatric community after that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Frances Lear, the founder of Lear's Magazine and author of a new memoir called The Second Seduction. We're going to take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Frances Lear. I want to talk with you a little bit about self-esteem and the effects of marriage on that for you. You had a career basically in the finer department stores as a buyer for women's departments. And after a rocky start, you seemed to be doing pretty well in that career. You gave that up when you started your third marriage, your marriage to Norman Lear. From your book, I get the feeling you were sorry you gave it up.
Yes, I was, because I should have done both. But in those days, it was very hard to do both. It was certainly hard to do it in retailing. The hours are very long. You take buying trips many times a year. I would have had to be away from my family. And I would not risk my marriage at that point.
During the first years that you were a mother, you didn't work. You stayed home with the children. You even took up embroidery. And then you read Betty Friedan's book. And at first you were very angry, and you even wrote an angry article about it, because why? You felt that it was saying your life wasn't worth anything?
Yes, I thought she was... she was wrong, that I was perfectly happy, that this was the way to live. And, of course, very soon I realized that she was not wrong, that that me as a human being and my life were only partial, and that there was something much more out there that I needed to have. I had had it before I was married. I had worked and achieved a certain amount of success. And I was known as that. Now I became known as somebody's wife. And Betty Friedan spoke to me. She was writing about me.
How did you change your life when you became involved with the women's movement?
Well, I got out into something that has been lost, unfortunately. But that was the glory of the movement, and that's sisterhood. I began to meet other women who were in similar or unhappy situations, and we talked to each other, and we worked in groups, and we marched, and we raised money, and we changed the country, and probably the world.
I think for a lot of people, when they turn 60, that's seen as the beginning of the end. For you, life really changed for the better in so many ways in your 60s. Everything from giving up drinking to starting Lear's Magazine, to feeling that you really found yourself again as a person. Why did that happen to you in your 60s, do you think?
Well, I don't know, except that it simply, I'm a late bloomer, I suppose, and that's and it took me a long time to do what other people do much earlier, also because of the times I was living in. I mean, I must believe, and I think I am correct in believing this, that I would not be here if it were not for the women's movement. That changed my life. It changed everybody's life. And if I had been 40 in the women's movement, or if I had been 20 and the women's movement had come along, then my life would have changed then. So history and I interface very, very closely.
Yeah, but the women's movement, I mean, the renaissance of that goes back about 20 years.
Yes.
And Lear's is about 4 years old, so there was a little bit of a gap there between the women's movement and you turning 60.
Well, I have to explain that gap. It took me a long time to change. One does not get out of a very traditional mindset in 20 minutes. I mean, I'm 68 years old. My mother and my grandmother and I lived in this role, and it was as much a part of me as independence and freedom is my own children's role. This enormous fight that I fought for about 15 years to come free is nothing that can be done overnight. Mm-hmm. Everything, every part of you has to change, and there is a lot of resistance.
When you and Norman Lear divorced, you came into millions and millions of dollars through the settlement. Did that enable you to start Lear's Magazine? And I guess I'm wondering, when you have a lot of money, you have a lot of options. Was it a difficult period figuring out, well, which option should you choose?
No, it was very simple. I knew about the magazine before I left California. I worked very hard for that money. Some people think that divorce settlements are just handed over because you live or because you're divorced. No, they are earned. I earned that money. And I used it for a magazine that I had conceived 6 months before I left to come to New York.
The cover of the current issue of Lear's has Ivana Trump on the cover, and there's a kind of photographic spread of her inside. Is that the image that you wanted for Lear's?
The cover pictures are a long story. I have a general manager who is the biggest newsstand consultant in America, and I have promised him 3 years of motion picture stars on the cover for newsstand sales. From then on, I can have women. But I must pay attention to circulation for a while.
So that was a circulation decision.
Yes, yes. Covers are a circulation decision, even though we like some of the covers very much.
Can I ask if you're in a relationship now?
Yes, I am. I am always in a relationship. I cannot live without love and work. I must have both. I am Freud's girl.
Okay.
I think he was wrong about hysteria in women, but he was right about love and work.
Well, Frances Lear, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, it was my pleasure.
Frances Lear's new memoir is called The Second Seduction. This is Fresh Air.